update on the Senior Center Recreation Center project. Looking forward to this. So take it away, Brent, Sally.
Good. Well, we're just connecting here.
Hey, while you're doing that, I'll just say thanks for allowing us to give you this update today. We have great news to report. It seems like before a stretch, there was this project had its challenges. We're out of that phase, and I won't take any of the thunder away from Sally or Gail, but have great things to report. Our board chair, Larry Mortensen, is here in attendance. Got people from the senior center side. We've got Jerry Williams, who has been an advocate for the center all along and continues to work with the seniors. So with that, are you ready?
I don't know. I just want to do my side first, okay. Sally, while you're getting hooked
up. Okay.
Sally will be giving you a visual tour and everything else here and has a presentation. I was just going to update you from the recreation center side of the facility. Number one, thanks for allowing us to be here again. They're not coming here asking for money. That's the first time ever, so we appreciate that. From the rec center side, the rec center is back up and operating as it did before we started construction. I guess what that means is we have two sheets of ice going, we have a 50-meter pool going, we have a gymnasium going, and we are programming just as if nothing had happened at all, which is amazing that we're back to that point. What's new up there is we have four additional hockey locker rooms. We have new figure skating, boys, girls, and coaches' locker rooms, and a new office for the figure skaters. We have new staff offices. We have a new main entrance, new concession stand, concession lobby, and also brand new restrooms in the facility. We have a new 50-meter pool with two movable bulkheads and a finished deck. We also have updated swimming locker rooms are also available up there. So facility is has had a major facelift, and everything up there is going very, very well. We opened the hockey locker rooms on November 1st. That was slightly behind schedule. We did have to move two ice hockey games over to Graham Arena, but since we have opened the hockey locker rooms, we've hosted 20 ice hockey games, over 30 boys and girls high school hockey games, just completed Section 1A and 2A hockey final playoffs there this weekend, and we've also hosted the Hiawatha skating competition. The swimming pool, 50-meter swimming pool, opened on December 1st, and since that time, we've hosted the St. Cloud College invite, the Vince Herring Classic swim meet, two club meets, Special Olympics meets, and then this weekend, we just hosted the boys' section swimming meet. So been very busy up there. Most recently, we opened the front entrance about the 1st of February. All the traffic now is coming through our main entrance, which is much, much needed. We also opened up the figure skaters' locker room, got them out of the gymnasium, which then made we reopened the gymnasium about a month ago. So everything up there is going quite well. We are going to relocate our offices here probably within the next month. We're just waiting for the new furniture to come into our offices, so all of you will be moving out front here within a month. The figure skating club is moving from their temporary location in there to their new office here within a month also. During all this time, really the only big problem we've had up there is parking. We're 200 stalls short of what we're going to be when we get done. The swim clubs have been fantastic. When they have big meets, they've been running a shuttle bus over to Kellogg Middle School back and forth. That's worked quite well. We've only had parking problems 5 to 8 times. We only had one or two more big events before, to count the ice skating show, I guess 3 events before were kind of complete and we'll have the parking lot back. So we're getting through that problem. That is really the only big problem we've had. What's left up there on our side of the building, the new elevator should be completed within 2 weeks. The warm water pool, which is a 25-yard four-lap pool, is under construction, and so is the link between the two buildings. Both of those will open with the senior center, and right now, as of today, my projected opening date is 8 months from tomorrow, somewhere around October 1st. And that's kind of right back on schedule. We did get a month to 6 weeks behind schedule when we ran into the landfill, but we've had a perfect fall weather conditions, and now it looks like this spring is phenomenal. So I think right now we're shooting for right around the October 1st for the grand opening. Somewhere in there, right now I would say we're 70 to 75% complete of the entire project. That's at the PayApp sitting house. So with that, I'll let Sally do her presentation, and then I'll come back up and we can sure answer any questions you have.
Gail, can I ask you a question first?
Sure.
Usually with the project, there are some amenities or incidental expenses related to, for example, the pool, scoreboards, or, just incidental items. Are you okay with that? Are there any things outstanding, or are the funds available coming together? Where's that at?
Sure. First of all, I think I would be remiss if I didn't mention Rochester Swimming Incorporated. That's a group that was formed just for this project. If you remember right, they came up and they contributed $600,000 up front. They did get a grant from Minnesota Swim Incorporated of $120,000, of that $400,000 that they borrowed from us. We gave them a funding mechanism to charge $5 per swimmer for every swim meet. That will probably generate them anywhere between $25,000 and $30,000 a year. The whole goal of that group is to purchase and supply competitive equipment to help run meets, scoreboards, lane lines, starting blocks, so on and so forth. Us and them together, first of all, not only are they raising money, they have a ton of sweat equity. If you've been up there, they went out and built that diving tower with their own manpower. Us and Sports Commission and them chipped in and purchased the materials and everything, but they have done a ton of things up there, and they continue to. They're out on the streets right now. Dr. Bill Shaughnessy is the head of that group, and they're out doing fundraising to help pay off their debt, and more than that, to start getting things like new scoreboards and stuff like that. They've been very, very active, and they will continue to be active. Right now, we do have everything to run meets. We're just trying to enhance them and make them better.
Any concerns there? They're kind of a work in progress?
At this point, we just met with them last week. I think it is a work in progress. I think between us and them, we can continue to peck away at all this list of things that they have. We'll see how their fundraising goes.
All right, thank you. Ms. Mead?
It's the $5 that collected for the swimmers. Is that solely to support the needs of the rec center?
That $5 goes directly to Rochester Swimming Incorporated, and it's put in a fund to help pay off their debt and buy competitive equipment for the pool.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Right, thank you. All right, Sally?
All right.
I'm sorry. I have one other question. I spoke to you a little bit earlier about it. And that was the going south on Broadway and turning west on Elton Hills. What did you do about the safety issue was concerning?
Well, let Sally do her presentation and we'll turn that over to administration or something like that.
Okay.
There's a variance on that, and that's being addressed with.
Okay.
That's good, Sally, get to her.
Thank you.
That might take the whole meeting.
All right, well, I am just so excited to be here and in front of you and have a chance to talk a little bit more about actually 125 Live and what this project is going to bring to the community. So I'm going to spend some time talking about that and just also touch a little bit on our future programming. I'll tell you where we are with our fundraising and our membership fees as we go forward. So, as you know, the 125 Live building and new name and future is really all a result of our board going through a strategic planning activity years ago that took the time to do a community-wide study to really examine, first of all, did the senior center need to continue? And if it was going to continue, what did it really need to look like in the future? And so this center was developed basically on that premise. And we have that entire study if any of you are interested in seeing it. But what it said are not things that are surprising because they're in the news every single day, that this cohort of aging individuals is not going to age like any other ahead of them. They're not going to sit around and knit and be in a rocking chair. They want to be active. They want to be healthy. They want to take care of their health. They want to be engaged in the community. And there's so many things, and you're going to see that our programming is going to depict exactly what that community model showed us that we needed to do to really impact our community going forward. So I'm just going to go back one more second to the whole name thing because it's kind of died down, thankfully, and everyone's really getting used to 125 Live. Again, 125 Live was named, and that was really a part of the vision, is to really look differently, to provide an opportunity for older adults that would be different than what our current facility offers. A new name really was enveloping that whole concept of being a community center. If you call it a senior center, then it stays a community center. If you get away from age-related connotations to the specific name of the center, then it will feel more like a community center. And that is really what we're doing with this center, is getting away from that and really trying to engage older adults in our community with the greater public, because we know older adults actually do better, they are healthier if they're engaged in the community, and this center is really going to do that. So before I go a lot further, I'm not going to talk about this, but if you're interested in the specifics, I can provide all of that to you. I could have brought a whole book for you. But this center has been designed specifically for older adults, and this probably gives one of the best examples. This may be the only senior center parking in the entire city. And what that means is this parking lot only one of the areas in the new center. I guess parking is always depicted by having as many cars as you can. But this shows that when people park, there's actually a sidewalk in the middle. So when people park, they leave their car and they're going to walk in the middle of the cars. Instead of behind people, older adults have a harder time turning around and looking where to walk. So they're safer walking in between the cars. It makes it safer for the drivers, for the walkers, and anybody that has any mobility issue are going to be able to safely get to the center. So in a really exciting amenity of the center. And again, this is probably a 10-page document that talks about what senior-friendly means. And it is very, very deliberately specific for everything we're looking at. But of course, the entrances, even the design. Steve Robotin reminds me often what our senior consultant said about senior-friendly. And so everything from the lighting to the colors that are picked to the kinds and styles of furniture that are being picked. So very, very specific. Again, walking paths, well-lit rooms, very unique audio-visual. We, in fact, are installing throughout our facility hearing loops. And if you're not familiar with what a hearing loop is, that technology is available with people with hearing aids. They simply click what's called a T-coil. So any facility that is mic'd up, that Bluetooths to their hearing aid. So one of the biggest concerns for older adults is their loss of hearing, and so they lose so much of their sociability and the ability to really interact in a public forum and listen to speakers. So it's really fantastic. That alone, of that $2.3 million, is $150,000 for the install of just that throughout the space that would have any microphone system in it. So I'm really here to talk to you about our programming overview because, again, it goes back to that study and why we're changing our model and what we're doing differently. So if you look at what we currently have, we have existing programs. Those are all going to transfer over to the new center. The addition of the new amenities, the warm water pool, the fitness center, we have a teaching kitchen, of course, a cafe. All of those elements, again, to bring people together. Not only with seniors during senior activity time, but throughout the afternoon, evening, and on the weekends. We are also addressing public health initiatives. It's very important that our organization, whose number one goal is to keep seniors living healthy and well and independently, take a look at what the needs in our community are. So we understand what the community health needs say, we know what the public health department initiatives are, and we are adding specific focus on those particular areas so we can make a difference for the lives of older adults by capitalizing and really working on these initiatives. Then our whole new area is really that community and intergenerational programming area, which we know that older adults do much better, again, when they're actively involved in the community. In fact, there's research that shows that older adults who regularly volunteer with children burn 20% more calories, have fewer falls, and have better memory than their peers. And if we take that to what the benefit for kids are, kids who have regular interaction with older adults perform better in school, they have better social skills, and they have less behavioral problems. So there is a win-win for the entire community when we bring these populations together. I'm going to give you just some examples about that in a minute, but we're really excited about, again, making this center a community center, focusing on needs of older adults that's going to benefit everybody. So our existing programs, again, I'm not going to go into those, but they're going to be so much better because we're going to be handicap accessible, which we're not in our current facility. transportation. We're going to be right on the bus line, and the bus is going to stop at the front door. That will be awesome for individuals. We'll have the hearing loop technology. Our facility will actually have, for those that don't have a hearing aid yet, we'll have a speaker system that can they can hear. Our system, being 30 years old, doesn't work very well. And again, the free ample parking, which is a very big concern for individuals that have been trying to come. Additionally, I'm not going to go into these, but of course the new amenities are going to offer an awful lot to our senior community and of course the community at large. And this is just a picture of the warm water pool, and I'll pull up a virtual tour in just a moment here. One of the new amenities. And then I mentioned these public health initiatives and partnerships. We are interested, and our goal is to really become that hub for senior-related health issues and to bring all of these areas together and to really serve as the place where we can address these public health initiatives. Some of them that we are going to work on initially include falls education, assessment, and prevention. So let me tell you a little bit more about that, because I'm not sure if you are aware that Olmsted County has the highest rate of deaths due to falls in the entire state of Minnesota. That's a problem in our community, one of the public health initiatives. We are also third in the nation for highest rate of deaths due to falls. So that's a big problem. So what can we do about that? We are working with Mayo Clinic, Olmsted Medical, UMR to bring to this center a falls assessment clinic. So we will be using the disciplines from Mayo Clinic, their physical therapy students, residents, and doctors to come in and help us bring this program to life so that we'll be able to do assessments of older adults, see where their risk is, and then give them a plan of action of what they can do to improve their ability to not fall. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. Of course, cognitive impairment and dementia and prevention is a huge issue, and we want to make sure that we are providing a center that helps people do whatever they can to stay dementia and Alzheimer's risk-free. And there are things that we can do, and that process will be implemented, and individuals can take these opportunities and put them into action. And then, of course, as our community ages, more and more people are going to be doing caregiving. So what can we do to support those caregivers? And we'll talk a little bit more about that. So again, this is a really exciting area. I'm not going to talk about the population increase, but there's a few things that are really important to know. First of all, this population of baby boomers that's into retirement right now or hitting retirement age, first of all, have more skills, education, and experience than any other aging cohort. So what that means for our community is we have this whole experienced set of older adults that we want to infiltrate into our community and make them be active and integrated and making a difference in the community. And there's lots of ways we can do that by providing some structure for those activities. Many are going to spend a third of their life in retirement. One of the things that new retirees find very difficult is that transition from work to retirement. And again, that's an area that we'll be providing structure for as well. So we really want to take this older adult population in our community and get them involved and active in active community areas. So as we talk about some things we might do, you know that Kellogg Middle School is two blocks away. So let's just talk a moment about how that might look in terms of programming. So after school, we would have older adults who would like to mentor and provide homework assistance. They're going to walk two blocks and have that assistance right there and can get that. In another room, we will probably have eighth graders, seventh graders who are technology wizards sitting there with their cell phones helping older adults who are lost. Like, will you help me figure out my cell phone? I don't know how to do this. Helping them with iPads, helping them learn how to Skype, how to Facebook. There's so much that young kids can do with older adults. So that's one example that we can use to, again, bring the populations together and really make a difference. We're going to be programming extensively with the Park and Rec Department, so we're in the process of developing those programs, which is very exciting. And again, that's bringing together this older adult population actively with our Park and Rec Department. It's pretty awesome to think about what that could look like. So the components of successful aging that we're going to be focusing on are really if we can lower disease and disease-related disability, if we can help people stay functioning high physically and cognitively, that is a really big win. Active engagement, and again, independent functioning. All those are the things that our organization is focusing on in terms of programming. So, in terms of what are the most common ailments and health issues for older adults, as you get older, it seems like they creep more and more. Most older adults have more than one chronic condition that they're dealing with, and this just gives you an idea of what those are. Again, our focus areas, I've talked a little bit about what those are, and those will be the areas that we'll be providing specific focus on. Again, I've already talked about Alzheimer's and dementia, but staying active, very critical, fall prevention, caregiver support, community linking, just to name a few. So what to expect for our programming? So, for example, Aging Eyes Initiative, we are going to serve as a partner with the State Services on the Blind. We are going to be able to provide information about eye conditions. We're going to be able to provide visual aids to help people at no charge and referrals. So we'll be doing a lot of education. That happens to be just called the Aging Eyes Initiative. If we look at Alzheimer's and dementia, loads of Alzheimer's and dementia education-related classes. We do memory screening. We'll continue to do that. There's a program called Habit. There's a respite program, Dementia Friendly. There's Act on Alzheimer's in our community. So we will be a completely dementia-friendly facility. That means every staff member will be trained as a dementia friend. Every group leader will be trained as a dementia friend. So we'll be able to support individuals who are having issues in that area. And I'm not going to go into a lot of these because these are very comprehensive in terms of what you can expect. Arts, we have an art studio. We're going to have two areas for art programming in the center. So loads of activity planning around that. Our brain and cognitive health area, brain gym exercises. I don't know if you've heard of that, but they're now brain gyms, not just physical gyms, but brain gyms to keep our brains healthy and well. A Memory Matters program, and of course, loads of social activities in terms of cards and games. Caregiver support I've talked about. Again, with chronic conditions, there are many evidence-based programs. That means they have had scientific study to show that they actually provide a benefit. So here's some examples. Living well with chronic conditions, matter of balance, stepping on. There's loads of those programs that we will be offering to individuals. So again, if you've had a balance assessment, you're going to come out, you're going to have with you a sheet that shows all of the things you can do to improve your balance. We'd suggest you take a balance class. Here are those that are offered here at 125 Live and throughout the county, for example. We're working closely with the Rochester-Olmsted County Falls Coalition. We are going to provide the first home for that coalition, so they have a place to meet from and do their initiatives through this space. In terms of connections, that's a really big area for older adults. So when it comes to part-time employment, what we want to do is partner with the business community, working with the chamber, to make sure our business community really understands how important it is to bring older adults into the part-time work environment. So we imagining having, for example, a job placement office maybe once a week in the center, and doing training for our businesses to help businesses understand the best way to bring in part-time work. Also during training for older adults, just because Steve's always done administration, maybe he wants to do something completely different in retirement. But how do I find that opportunity in our community? There's so much talent we want to put back into the community. In terms of volunteer opportunities, our community has a host of volunteer opportunities, but older adults have recognized that it's hard to tap into what those are. I'm having initial conversations with United Way about putting the volunteer office at this center and connecting seniors, doing interest surveys, and connecting them with all of the volunteer possibilities throughout the community. Again, if you get an older adult interested in something they're interested in, they will still stay active and healthy and well and productive in our community. We'll also have really great ideas about, for example, some of the things that are difficult for seniors is transportation. We know a lot of older adults don't even want to drive to our current site because that's going downtown, and the DMC initiative scares them to death. So what about if we park everybody on Thursdays at 125 Live or in the parking lot. We get some buses and we bring people down to Thursdays on First. So it's all of those connections, getting people together, bringing them where they need to be, and getting over those things. Even like, let's say, the downtown farmers market on Saturday. Can they park there and can we bring them? So again, it's just looking really creatively about how to really support older adults in our community and keep them active. Again, and then partnering with all our senior providers, providing space for them within the center to, again, do their work that helps older adults stay healthy and well. And I'm not going to go into these, but as you know, these are just some more programming opportunities, the crafts and hobbies, and just the endless opportunities for education. So where are we now? I would tell you that as of 129, we try to only bother the owners or the representatives from TSB or the construction about at the end of every month and say, where are we now? And I would say we're, as of today, we're still about 45%. Apparently that takes a long time to raise that number. But we're heading for that opening in the fall, and we're really excited about that. And the recreation center, as you know from what Dale said, is 100% complete except the warm water pool and just moving into their office area. So very exciting. I'm going to talk about membership fees in just a moment. Those were our 15. And this slide is in the wrong spot. I apologize. So here's just another. Fitness is going to be a huge area, as you know, at the center. Huge area. So gym activities. And then here's some other health and wellness things. Again, that's mirroring the needs that are showing up in the public health initiatives and the community needs initiative. But we imagine having a farmer's market on the site when we can. Bring one grower in to provide fresh produce for older adults. Having a place where they can stop and get their own crop box, for example, or ones that are actually sized for old adults because most are just too large. Again, providing transportation and that podium property, one of the functions we want that to come out of that is a bike share. Hop right on those bike paths, and seniors are really excited about having access to a bike that they don't have to maintain. They can stay healthy and well by access to biking in our community. And again, more fitness-related classes that will happen in the fitness studio and what kinds of things we can expect outside. We're working with UMR on a culinary garden at the site, garden clubs, adventure clubs. There's so much. And then, of course, the warm water pool is going to bring some really great opportunities to the center, all sorts of opportunities. One of the things that people are excited about is on a Sunday afternoon, it's grandparents swim. You can bring your grandchildren, swim in that warm water pool, for example. And lots of social activities, but most important, really, the service component that's going to come to the center. We have a whole personal care area of the new center, which is going to allow us to do foot care, podiatry, all sorts of activities here that really help older adults stay healthy and well. And technology, we have a technology learning center within the center, and you can see what that all means. I think there's some things on here we could all benefit from. All right, I'm going to just move into this. Is becoming community-wide information tomorrow, March 1st, but we have determined what our membership levels and fee structure will be for 125 Live. You can see we have four different categories that we'll be implementing: social membership, a wellness membership, Wellness Plus, and a community fitness membership. So our offerings begin at age 50. If you even consider yourself old at 50, right? An older adult. So you can see it'll be $20 a month for a social membership to the center. See, I don't know if I know how to shut that off. I just got this. Of course, it's a board member. A wellness membership, and wellness would provide you all the opportunities in the fitness area, so fitness and aqua. Wellness Plus simply means to both areas, if you want to have a social membership and the wellness membership. And then community fitness. You can see that starts at age 18 and goes to 49. So what that would mean is very early in the morning, when it's not senior exclusive time, let's say whatever time the rec center opens and you're a hockey mom and you'd rather go on the work on the treadmill instead of sitting in the stands, you'd have that opportunity. So that would be in the morning and then at the end of the day. Again, that whole community center opportunity. I'm not going to get into what the social membership is, but it's really everything except fitness. So they can take part in personal services at discounted rates. They can go into the billiards room, open art, the computer lab. All of the other parts of the center will be available to individuals for within that social membership. And then again, the wellness, you can see what that means for individuals, including the gym activities that will be programmed. And the Wellness Plus. And again, I've talked a little bit already about what that community fitness membership would be for. All right. So just because you might hear something from current members, we're making it really a nice thing for current members. So people who are already a member of the center, we'll not have to pay the registration fee. There will be a registration fee for new members. They'll have 50% discount for the first 6 months in 125 Live. We're also going to give them a little preview to the new center, and they'll receive two guest passes and, I don't know, maybe a water bottle or a coffee cup. I don't know. We'll have to figure that out. All right, so I'm going to just do a little update on our fundraising for you. We are fundraising, and what are we fundraising for? This gives you an idea of everything that's gone into the fundraising pot. I've talked a little bit with you about this in the past, but what this means is a lot of things that are currently in a construction budget. When things got ugly, and all of you know how ugly things got, we kept putting things in the senior center's pot instead of going back to the drawing board and having to redesign because of all of the issues that came up. So you can see entrance canopy, fireplace, jacuzzi, hot tubs. So, for example, there is going to be a hole where we want the fireplace to go because that can be put in later. Same thing with the hot tub, same thing with the entrance canopy. So what we've devised in terms of what are things we have to move in breaks out to be about $1.6 million. The things that we absolutely have to have, a security system, a telephone system, the tables and chairs, for example, the kinds of things that we have to have, the window treatments fall in that. So in terms of where we're at 40% of our $2.3 million goal. So right now we have just under $950,000, and that includes the sale of our parking lot, and that is all closed up, by the way. Thank you, City, for purchasing our parking lot for, $635,000. Thank you. So that's in there, and it also includes all of our donations to date, and that includes the individuals that have put in a pledge as well. And we are also doing loads of grant writing at this time, and in terms of our membership, we have a membership-only goal for the center, which is $150,000. And right now we've raised over $100,000 towards that goal. And our goal is to have 100% participation from our members. So that is in place. I am happy to have with us today a number of ambassadors. Our ambassadors are out telling our story. And Jerry Williams is the chair of our ambassador group. We also have Jim Sloan. We have Elaine Case, Bill Wichter with us. And missing today is Al Menino, who is also a part of our ambassadors. So they are out on the road, taking the presentation, telling our story, identifying individuals who might want to think about donating to the center, and then I will meet with those individuals going forward. So that is where we're at with our fundraising. I would love to have each of you in the room, because we already have ambassadors, but we have a new group called the Boosters. Those are individuals who believe in this mission, believe in what's happening with this center, that would also like to support all the good that's going to come out of this new center coming to reality. So what else are we doing? We are working to secure a cafe vendor. As you know, part of the facility is going to have a cafe. Again, that was by design. Again, more integration with our community and open to the public cafe, so we are working on that. We've also brought in a specialized consultant to assist us in getting ready to move into this new space. Her name is Beth Witt. You may have the opportunity to meet her. Her job with us is to help us have everything in place to move in, and she is specifically working on our programming agenda. And so her background is she was the director of Park and Recs for the city of Savage and Eden Prairie. So she has a community center background. It's going to help us integrate and be ready for the day we open and make sure our partnership with Park and Rec is as strong as possible and we can have a good partnership moving forward. We are also working on developing our programming with our community partners. I talked about all those initiatives. And what we want to do is really work with our community to identify how those should look in our community. And again, nothing better than working with our community partners to see how that should really operate in our community. We have established our membership fees. Now these have been established, so we will be bringing those to the public, as I mentioned. Working on our operating budget for the new center as well. And I already mentioned writing grants and proposals and raising money. So I have some things that I will just leave here for you, but I would just open it up to any questions that you might have.
Mr. Hickey.
Yep, thank you for the presentation. One question I had, and I know it's not a direct comparison, but the membership rates that you outlined, how does that compare to what you currently have at the...
Our current rates, yes. Our current rate is $70 a year. Plus, if they buy the parking pass, that's 50, so it's 120, so $10 a month, so it's doubling. That seems significant, but the comparison of what is going to be offered to what we offer now is actually more than double. So in terms of the benefit individuals are going to have, it's going to be so, so dramatic. The other thing that I will mention is in terms of scholarships, individuals who are low income, will have a process. They'll be able to fill out an application. They would meet with the senior advocate, and there will be a sliding fee scale established, so people who have difficulty with payment will be able to be identified through that process and will receive either a complimentary or be put into the sliding fee scale, so they'll have a reduced rate membership.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Mr. Bilbeck.
Sally, so what is your goal for by the time you move in? Where are you hoping to be with your your fundraising?
Our goal? Well, we certainly want our 1.6, so we have all our move-in things, and then we will just continue to fundraise, so we'll be able to bring all of the elements to the center at some point in the future. In order to do all of the programming that you see here, we are going to need to be able to have some of that fundraising in place. So, for example, the things that are going in the personal services, that's not in the $1.6 million, for example. The hearing loop isn't in the $1.6 million, so we want to be able to have that in place. So we'll just continue to fundraise, but we know, we really need that initial amount. What I would say is I think we can get there. It's a big goal. There's a lot of need, but we also have a great program that we're going to be delivering, and I'm catching up with the ambassadors tomorrow, but we really want to hear from the community about is this the expectation that we heard from this survey, and should we alter? And I really believe once the community really understands what this facility is going to be, and before we finish, I want to do the virtual tour, too, for you.
Anyone else? Mr. Ruska.
Sally, thanks for the presentation. You had a lot of different things there that you have for community engagement and different programming and everything. How's your outreach program? When I look at, look at an 85-year-old father that lives at Shorewood, and I'm wondering, do you go into there and do presentations about, what the senior center can offer to them and what the what different you have so many things, and I look at and I see that a lot of those people they're just kind of looking for something to do, so they're there and you're over there with these programs,
And it would seem that there's a lot of that going on in our community. Mm-hmm. These centers are getting built, and these people are living in the areas. And I just don't see a lot of them as having vehicles. I don't see a lot of them as jumping on the bus. But I'm wondering, is there some way that you could maybe kind of build some type of membership or need, and then have any kind of a shuttle or anything that could run them back and forth? Has that ever been looked at to try to grow your membership base and to try to bring in new people that are interested in it? Or?
Well, that is a good question. What I would tell you is that our board is not interested in taking on the transportation challenge, and that is because the transportation issue for our community is a community issue. And it's, as an advocate for older adults, I would say that it's not important to just get to a senior center. To 125 Live, they need to get wherever they need to go, and our community has to figure that out. And I have some ideas about that, and I'm excited to do that. But it puts the rock on every individual person to figure that out, and I think it's a community problem. I think we should have a senior bus that goes around, and it has a route. And other communities do it, and they stop at all the senior housing, and they create a loop. They can come, they can drop off at the center once in the morning, get picked up at noon, same thing. I think there's a lot we can do, but I will tell you, as the current director, I would never want the board to look at getting their own bus, doing that whole thing. I think as a community, we need to figure that out.
Well, I know Sherwood has their own bus.
May not be the answer, but I yeah. will tell you the problem with that is most of the transportation units for senior housing are booked taking people to the clinic. And so their social activities are at the bottom. And older adults need as much as what you see here as they do a trip to the doctor's office. In fact, if they have more of this, they would go to the doctor less. So it's a real challenge, honestly, for our community. And it may not be the answer you wanted to hear, but it is something we have to really take a look at. How are we going to make sure people can get where they need to go in this community and stay here and live here?
All right.
Just a couple of questions. About the new name. I know that's still going around, although, you know, it's being better accepted. But you have some additional language that's not on your brochure that circles that logo. And when will that be publicized? Or will it be further disseminated? And then the other, go ahead, you can answer that if you want. The other question I had was about cross-referencing the Senior Citizen Center and pointing them to 125 Live. For example, if I want to go to the Senior Citizen Center, there would be some type of mechanism that would point me in the right direction.
Are you talking about online, for example? So there are ways to embed within technology so it'll direct you right to 125 Live. I forget what the term is for that. So we'll make sure that people are not going to be lost because we're not naming it a senior center. Those links will all be in place. And I think you're talking about the calling it Center for Active Adults. Yes. Yeah, that's already been implemented throughout our membership brochures and everything, so people understand that it is a center for older adults, but a community center as well.
Of course, I knew that when I was referencing your
yes.
Your presentation doesn't reflect that.
Yes.
And I hope that it would in the future. It is for active adults.
Absolutely.
As well as the community
yes.
center. The other question I had, because this just came up to me just today, actually, is are you reaching out to visitors? Are you working with the Convention and Visitors Bureau, for example?
Well, we haven't done that yet, but yes, absolutely. In fact, we will have short-term passes for individuals who might be here like a month or two. For individuals that are just visiting our community, we'll have guest passes, daily passes, all of that. So once we have that all developed, they'll be receiving that information as a packet for individuals that are looking to connect in our community.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thanks. Great presentation.
All right. I'm going to put this on then for you here. I guess we're not going to hear it. I'm sorry. I thought it would at least come out of mine. I don't know how to get rid of this thing. Go away. sorry, it has really great music. Short and sweet. All right, I think Dale was going to come up unless you've forgotten your questions for him.
It was me.
I have just one more question. Is there an acronym for LIFE? I understood it was LIFE, Invigorate, Vision, and Energy. Is that a true statement?
Well, we're not sticking to any. We have loads of them for all of them, but nothing, yeah. And it can be 125 live, live, we don't care, whatever people want to call it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Well, thank you for the update. We appreciate that. Sounds like things are on track. I think we continue to watch and hope very much so that you are able to meet your fundraising goals so that we can move in and with all the appropriate furnishings, fixtures, equipment, and really make this an outstanding project for the community, so best of luck on that.
Yeah, I'll stick around in case you have questions afterwards, and I've got things here if you want to pick up here.
Okay, we'll move on to our next topic then, which is a review of the department head contract authorization. Mr. Martinson?
First of all, thank you. this was actually going to end up on the agenda for the 14th or whatever the new date is. But then we got to thinking, Brent sent out some surveys to some department heads just to see how it was going. And I thought we should just maybe back up and just take a minute with the council just so that they kind of gain a little comfort level with where we're at on this. I don't know if you recall, but we started this thing back actually in 2014. Went to a charter commission amendment so that we actually had the authority to allow department heads to enter into a contract, but it was a permissive language and it required the council to actually make an authorizing resolution that would specify exactly how that would be done. And I sent to you and then attached in the packet is the actual resolution that got passed on that. But as Terry Atkins pointed out, that had a sunset clause on it, and that is going to sunset coming up here sometime soon in March, which is why Brent started putting it together and put it on the agenda. But what we thought we would do is just, so that resolution specified both some various approvals and steps that it had to go through. It specified some limitations on what kind of a contract would be considered eligible for department heads to enter into themselves. $50,000 is the limit, so we kind of coined the phrase micro-contracts on these. And I just thought with perhaps, at the same time, we started rolling this into our new document management system and said, well, if we're going to do this, let's try and automate this. Let's not try and make all this paper shuffling, so especially with the steps that the council required in it. So I have Carl somewhere around here, right there behind me, Carl Hunter from our IT group that actually has been pretty instrumental in a lot of the different projects on the laser fiche that we've been using for our document management system. And I thought if he could just run through it, he turned it into a slide presentation and just kind of give you a feel for just how it is that this process works so that you can understand it from your standpoint. And then I'll walk into a couple other things, as I noted on the agenda, just kind of the comments from the departments and sort of where we're hoping to take this on the next phase of this. So I'll back off and let you take a look at this quick.
All right. Thank you, Dale. So as Dale mentioned, the process started with contracts received. I'll talk quite loudly since this is going to be in small print. Try to fit all this in one page. But the process outlines the resolution as follows. So someone in the city receives a contract, and then they will be dubbed the contract caretaker, and they submit it to the department head for approval. Should the department head say, no, I'm not approving that, the process ends and it's rejected. They say, yeah, I'll approve that. It goes on to the finance tech that's assigned to that department, and they verify that the funding is allocated already in either the operating budget or an existing CIP. Now, they don't have the authority to reject the contract as a finance technician, but they can request additional information. Maybe they have to clarify some of the language regarding the financing of it, or which budgets are paying for this if it's being spread across a few of them. At this point, the contract caretaker will then resubmit the information and will enter this loop until they figure that out, or until the contract caretaker gives up and rescinds the contract. The next step is the city administrator will review all these before they go on to the city attorney. City attorney follows the same steps as the finance tech, but will be much more involved in all the language of the contract or perhaps the reference documents that the original contract provides but is not immediately available. And the same process follows where they go back and forth and will work to amend the contract to find agreeable language until either the contract caretaker gives up or the vendor meets the city attorney's recommendations. Once the city attorney has met the recommendations, it goes on to our city clerk to denote the retention period and if there's any private or public data concerns before going to the mayor for his review, and then it is captured and stored and sent back to the contract caretaker. This is what the submission looks like for a contract caretaker. They select the approval route at the top, which is what denotes which department head or authorized delegee is allowed to approve these. They then enter some supplemental information about the contract for context and archival purposes. That's what it looks like filled out. We're not actually ordering anything from Acme Company, it's just a demo. After they hit submit, a notification sent through email to the department head. And this is what the department head's email looks like. They are provided with some brief context with a description and then some information on what their next step is. Throughout the process, each person who is prompted to do the next step receives an email with similar language guiding them through what they're required to do with the direct link to log in and do so. When the department head logs in, they see a review of the submitted information, and they can edit all this information because they're the one ultimately responsible for it. At the top, they will see the last action or who submitted it. On the right side, they will see the process details. Each person who's involved in a step, the city attorney, the finance technician, city administrator, will see the same screen, except they will see then, of course, the previous step before them, as well as all the steps on the right.
The department head will then at the bottom, as long as anyone who's recording a decision will have their decision presented to them, and their selection will dictate the next course of action. They can also provide commentary in there to help move the process along or provide additional information. Tracking, any person who submits a contract, so any contract caretaker, can log into the system and hit My History, and they will see the submission status of what they've sent in, as well as where it's at and for how long. And at the end, when the process completes, you'll have a complete audit history of who did what when and what additional comments were made, if any. Very brief and simple. Any questions for me at this point?
I like the process. It's one that I'm particularly familiar with, and I like the automatic or electronic signatures and so forth, and knowing that it can move along the pathway. If someone's out of office, they can still check, the contract status and provide their authorization and so forth. They're not, it doesn't need to be tied to a piece of paper and a desk, and that's a positive. Other questions or comments? Or Dale, you want to?
First of all, I want to thank Carl for this. I mean, Carl has a whole bunch of other projects he's working on with Laser Feast. And so one of the things, this has taken us a little while. We've done some pilot projects, primarily finance, HR, a few other smaller ones that we've done, just to try and get some feedback, figure out how we can tweak this a little bit, how we get the screens to lay out a little differently so it's a little more intuitively obvious to the uninitiated observer, just how to go through this. But we did a little demo with the department heads probably
in November,
thank you. And so a lot of them haven't really used it much yet. And you know, when I started realizing this sunset clause was coming in, I'm like, holy smokes, we don't really have a whole lot of people. I served up to you a link to the contracts, because then that's the last part of it, is just to let the council look at any of these contracts that come up and they can comment on them or whatever. So hopefully I had a chance to look at that a little bit over the weekend. But I do have a few, you know, from the comments for the other departments, the ones that have used it, and I would probably say Terry, you should ask him, because he's the one that gets a lot of this, and sometimes I think we should just start with Terry, because there's always some amendments Terry wants to the contract, it seems like, or there's some language that probably should be in there. But we keep looking at these as, there are a number of things that we do, and I think I mentioned this before when I started this whole process, that are, we do purchase orders. We sign, if it's an item that we're going to receive, you know, some hardware piece of something. The department's head sign all the time for things that are all kinds of amounts that are larger than this, but when it's some sort of act of service, some kind of work that somebody's going to do, then suddenly it becomes a contract for service. And it had been where we had to take every one of those to the council, technically, if we're going to stay in compliance with everything. There's a lot of them that are small ones, like I mentioned to you, that we just signed to get it done because we have a project underway, or we have a small change to a software project that we're working on, and we just need some other vendor to change something. And we were just signing it because it just couldn't wait for the next council meeting. So this is basically a process, as we went through the Charter Commission with this, to just keep our workflow moving and moving forward, where, again, from our perspective, you hire professionals to do these kinds of things, and we were just looking for a way to facilitate that and make that more effective. But so the comments so far, the departments that have used it seem to like it, seem to, you know, once they get have done it a couple, three times and get comfortable with the process, they seem to like it quite a bit. There are a few things that we would like to see, and I think I put those on this memo here, some recommended amendments. One of the things that comes up is, you know, when I started this out, I called it the department head signature authority, and that really was a misnomer, because as Terry keeps pointing out, nobody can bind the city of Rochester other than the mayor and the city clerk. Okay, so what we really do is we give the department heads the authority to enter into a contract, but in the end, they're signed by the mayor and clerk. Now, sometimes the mayor's off traveling someplace, or sometimes it doesn't. So, like we did with the resolutions and ordinances and some other things, as the language in here specifies, we basically kind of have if the mayor doesn't sign it within 5 days, then it's electronic signatures anyway. It's automatically applied. And we're essentially asking for that same kind of authority, at least I'm going to suggest that in the resolution that I bring to you on the 14th of March, that we have something similar to that if the mayor's gone and doesn't get back to these,
the signature is automatically applied, and the clerk gets it next and does the attesting and that kind of thing and goes forward. And so that was one of the requests that we had to make changes as we go forward. The other one that we keep running into is this multi-year contract question. So there are a number of things that are copier maintenance things. That they're basically three-year contracts with some increase estimate in there. They always give us the right to cancel them at any point in time anyway. What we've had Terry have us get in a lot of these different three-year contracts is just basically language that says it's all pending approval, future budget approval. So basically, it doesn't really bind us to anything if, by chance, the council says, no, we're just not going to provide enough funding for this in the next year, then we're not going to proceed with the contract. Because even our finance techs, as they get it, we had contracts that were starting on, you know, November, October at some time. It was a year contract. And they're like, well, how do we approve this? This is falling into the next year's budget authority. It's an operating contract. We don't have any real authority, you know. So basically, we're trying to change all those contracts. It's just a standard language change. So we're going to come back and ask again in this resolution. It just says, you know, it can't just be single-year contracts, or it can't just be the current year budget authority, because a lot of these roll over into the next budget year anyway. But we'll have that language in there all the time to protect the council from getting into something that they want to get out of. And then the last thing that I was suggesting is that instead of this sunset clause, again, if you're comfortable with this process and what you've seen so far, that you'd be okay with it. Again, you can change this anytime you want, but rather than an actual specific date sunset, that if I don't get this to the agenda on time, or things get bundled up on the agendas that I can't get back to you with this because other things that are more pressing, that I don't all of a sudden lose that authority right in the middle of processing some contract that I've got with somebody, and we've already gone back asking for language changes, and all of a sudden I say, oh, sorry, the authority's gone. I'd rather if we could just extend this now, but then have an annual review where we bring it back to you and see if you have any concerns or any additional amendments that we want to bring to you.
I think my recollection is we purposely put the sunset clause in there at that time, mostly so that we would force a checkpoint at this point, just so we could see how it's working. One thing that I think really helps is this electronic process, because that gives us the audit trail also. Exactly. Who initiated, who signed off on it, what were the file notes, et cetera. So you've got that documentation that was missing before.
Yeah.
So that, I think, helps make the case. But anyway, I think that was my recollection, and we just wanted to force an opportunity to have this kind of a discussion and see how it was going. Other questions, comments from the council? Mr. Ruskin.
Just a quick one. Now that you kind of see, you said some of the department heads are using it, but others still aren't familiar with it. When it's up and running, where everyone, if they do grasp on this, what's the frequency? You think? How many of these are you going to? Any idea how many of these we're going to see?
I don't have a good feel for that. I think the more that, again, it takes you almost, even for me, I've done probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 of these now probably, and it takes you at least a couple, 3 to kind of get to understand how this back and forth goes. I think as Terry's used it more, he's more comfortable. He just uploads now the contract with a red pen, you know, written on your contract so that you know exactly what it is he wants changed on those and kind of forward those on to whoever you're working with on the contract. So I think the more you use it, you kind of go, oh, this is pretty slick. I can get this thing started. I won't forget about it because, you know, there's a reminder that keeps popping back up to me. So I think in time, there will be quite a few. And I think what I don't have a handle on, to be honest with you, is how many things are just getting signed right now that aren't really following what technically is the correct process. I mean, they're just people. Honestly, they'll accept my signature for a lot of things that I don't have any authority to sign for, right? And it never really becomes an issue unless something blows up. So I don't know how many of those there are out there.
So, and then the other question is, it says reviewed by finance for budgetary authority. Is that finance department? Is that what you're talking about, the finance department?
Yeah, so every department.
Make sure it fits into a code or its funds are there.
Right, so every department basically has a liaison kind of assigned to them. So we have different technicians, account technicians, you call them, and they are responsible for different groups of departments. And so whenever it flows into any one of those drop-down things, this is the finance department or this is the library department, or it will automatically go to whatever tech usually works with them. They already are pretty familiar with their budget. They're already pretty familiar with what projects they might have going on. So there's a CIP track of this, and there's an operating budget track of this, too. So if it goes to CIP, they already know what things are out there and what this might be a change order for some small project they're working on or something like that. So
why the council isn't really approving this, they already have the budgetary process, so it's just executing it.
Exactly.
They're not going to overreach anything that hasn't
exactly. Just like a purchase order. If it was a you know, an item that I was buying instead. We're just doing it based on the approved budget authority the council already gave us.
You mentioned some areas have tried it and some not. Is that because we're in kind of a pilot or implementation phase, but once it's we are implemented, everybody must use this process, right?
Right.
Okay.
So again, when we presented it to the department heads, they, you know, some of them were more in tune to this because they wanted this before, and some of them were kind of like,
okay.
Oh, okay, well, I hadn't really thought about that, but I could use it for this, this, and this, and this that I used to do. And so it's just kind of, now we're going to go back out and kind of walk them through some of the process, kind of actually put one of their contracts in and get them to use it a little bit more. Because some people just, you know, it's one of those things where a department head level, there's actually more, depending on how big the department is, there's probably operational people that are a step or two below that that actually handle their contracts. And they maybe haven't even understood this or seen it yet. Once they understand, they can just scan this and throw it into the system and get it going. I think there'll start to be a lot more use of it. So,
okay. All right. Other questions, comments? I assume there's some consensus that this will come forward as an RCA
at the next, next agenda. Yeah, with those recommended amendments, unless anybody has any problem with those or wants to see those written differently.
Anyone have any issues, questions, problems? Sounds like you bring it forward.
Thank you very much.
Again, I like the process that really gives the documentation on
the trail. I like the sunset. It's really coming back to us for double check. So.
But you're okay the next go around is your review? Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
All right. I'm sorry, did we have a question?
I like the flow chart. It's kind of easy to follow. So thank you. So there's not going to be much training on that, though, is there?
No, not once they. This is just a few basic steps they have to understand, and once they get that done, you know, it's pretty simple.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Any other business for this afternoon?
Four items for today. I would like us to, we have a list of topics that we have coming up, but a lot of times we don't find out about them until kind of the last minute, and there's been some topics, and I've raised a stink about the housing issue that I've been asking for 16 months now. So since we're supposedly setting the topics that we're covering in these meetings by consensus, and I understand things will pop up, I think what we should be doing is at each one of these meetings, just not have a list of important topics coming up, but also let's plan out our next four or five meeting topics and have it available, so if there's any issues or concerns, we can bring it out. Right now, there's just no communication. I don't feel like I'm helping to contribute to setting the course of the discussion at all, and this would be a better way of handling that. So if the council's okay with that, I'd like to see us planning these things out ahead, and then hopefully we'll have a lot less cancellations too, because I think we've had like five in the last quarter.
Okay. So, and we can go deeper on that now, or you can go on to your, you said you had three other
topics. Are we okay with that?
Well, typically what I do anyway, is I work closely with administration, and we, the topics that we establish that we want to talk about, there's some give and take with whoever the presenters are, the departments, to pull the information and so forth, and then we put a date to the calendar as quickly as we know it's available. So, with that said, for example, I mean, just pick one. Let's say you wanted to, your topic was the police precinct.
My second topic will be getting a date, hopefully in March, on for an affordable housing update.
Okay. Mr. Bilovich? Okay.
That's fine. Put dates on, that's fine.
Okay. Part of it is the note that I think what you told me today is really that you don't want to be directly involved in setting these.
Well, my understanding is now Randy's got a process going where everybody, all the council members are waiting in on determining what their, if four of them are determined that a project is going to be discussed, then it'll be discussed.
Then
it'll be
scheduled. Came back with, a majority.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I would say I had no idea until just a few days ago about the two topics that we're on today.
Well, that senior center fund, that came up just the other day by myself.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why I want these things to
And I would still up. Like the flexibility to do something like that.
And we can have our meetings go longer, and I appreciate that. But like I said, when it, you know, I want to get I want to have some ability to steer these topics, because like I say, it's been 16 months I've been trying to get the affordable housing update.
I think we put this together a year ago so that we had that in place, and I think steering or having input is what we're all doing, and some of the things maybe don't end up the way everybody wants them, but everybody's having a say in it. We've got some structure to it. We didn't used to have any kind of structure before this, so now we've got things that are in the queue, we've got things that are coming up, and we've got things that are down the road a ways, and I think that's a lot better process than we've had in the past, and I think we're all having input in it. And
What's the downside of planning a month ahead?
Say that again.
What's the downside of having the next few meetings planned out?
Well, I think the flexibility's worked out pretty well, so that sometimes you don't know exactly who's available and what's going to come up and what things are hot topics. We have meetings that we'll be sitting at a council meeting and come up with something and say, we need to talk about this, at the next meeting also. I mean, things like that.
Well, and we do have some topics planned out for the end of March on the calendar.
Do we have the dates on them in there?
Yes,
I was looking at the one that was just sent out.
On the 21st, we're going to talk about the sidewalk improvement district, and we asked for the food truck ordinance changes to come back. The 14th, we're going to talk about the library expansion and review the parking ramp number six.
I know that one.
Again. 28th, we're going to talk about wastewater or the discharge permit, and that will also be the day we have the joint city-county meeting where we review the status of the comprehensive plan. So we are trying to peg these things at least several weeks out.
16 months I've been looking for housing, and everyone agrees it's an important topic, and yet it never is happening. So what's the first one after that? It's April 3rd, April 4th?
Unless we want, yeah.
Can we peg that? Can we put it there?
So help me understand more specifically, who would respond?
Yes, Stephen's had a note for a couple months on exactly who I'd be looking to present and what topics I'd have them presenting on, but it would be both the HRA providing an update of the process, the use of their funds, and what we can do, how we direct developers when they come into the community. The second part of this would be the foundation folks would come in and give us an update on where it is, because again, we were supposed to have a housing action plan November of 2014 was when we were supposed to get that, and we don't have that yet, and I know why, because I'm involved, there's some work going on that again, but we get an update from them along with presenting the action items that Minnesota Housing Finance Agency has presented for things that we can do to address affordable housing in the community today, and we can choose to ignore those items or take some action on those items, but at least it'll be on the table at that point.
Okay. So, Ms. Mead?
I just wonder, we have flexibility to move those streets around. If we want to move this housing up to second quarter, for example, if the people are ready.
We can establish a date we want. Again, there's a little bit of a give and take, depending on who the presenters are or the topic, whether they're prepared and ready to go.
Well, and I will let that topic get pushed off for anything that we feel is more important than affordable housing in the community.
I don't know that it's a matter of importance.
Oh, it's a matter to, after 16 months, it's importance to me.
That's the thing. Again, my comment in my email today, I think that we all have things that we feel important, but
yes,
everything that comes in front of the city has some importance to support.
Yes.
I understand you wish to have some urgency in this because it's been a delay, but I think it's important to recognize that there's important issues here in the city that are dealing, and everything that we deal with has importance to somebody. And so I think that's fair. And I understand your frustration on the 16th month, but I think it's important to understand the issues that come up in front of this group are important to the city and its future growth, and it's important to somebody somewhere. So
we've had crows twice in that period.
Well, and I
we can do that with a memo.
I understand where you're coming from, but I'm just also saying the fact is that this council deals with issues that are important to somebody and the growth of this city. So
well, and if we, the council, are setting the agenda, and we don't have a formal process for doing right now, we're fly by night, that's one thing, because then people can see who's prioritizing and who's not prioritizing. We can't see that right now. There's no transparency to how we're setting up these meetings. There's no transparency of this. We have the sheet, which is an improvement. We have some dates on there. But like I say, I don't want to get into the situation where we can't talk about affordable housing, but we're canceling five committee of the whole meetings. I got a real problem with that.
Yeah, and I think the fact is that we work pretty diligently not to cancel meetings. We refuse a few meetings. There's times when we as council members are not at those meetings. But as a whole, this group is meeting pretty solid every Monday or every Wednesday after a holiday. I think it's a little bit
We've canceled five in the last quarter. Yes, in the last 3 months.
With the holidays and things. I think if you're looking at holidays, that's one thing. But this group does a pretty good job of meeting pretty solid every week.
And I think the other part is when our list gets that backed up, when we can't talk about something as important as affordable housing in 16 months, we need to be thinking about scheduling some additional meetings to plow through this stuff. We can't just let it go on forever like this.
And I have no argument with that, but I just think the fact is we've got to understand that every issue that we deal with has importance to somebody or the future of this city somewhere.
It means.
You know, I have to agree that affordable housing is an issue that we've talked about a lot. And, you know, I asked for a couple of things that I have on the agenda to put it on this quarter because I wanted to read earlier while I'm still, you know, here. So I think all we have to do is find a date to move affordable housing up in the second quarter, but can we slip down?
I think if you want that, we need to make sure they know so they can get the right people here that are supposed to have those conversations.
Well, and there's another aspect to this, too. If it's a topic of particular interest to a council member, I think we need to take some ownership as well. For example, I know Mr. Campion wants to talk more deliberately about technology implementation. He's taken that upon himself to get more involved with the Acela implementation and so forth. So I don't know, depending on the topic, I don't know that it's fair to just say, I want, and then give it to somebody, some staff member, to throw on the pile. We can take some responsibility, too. So with that in mind, and I know that we want to talk about the women and minorities and so forth, I'm not sure who would actually bring that report to us.
Well, I have a good idea.
I'm sorry?
I have a good idea. Okay. Anyway, that's one of the things that are important to me, and I think it's important to our community to have that kind of data, not only what's been done at DMC, EDA, but what we're doing in the city to address that same kind of concern. In other words, we really do need to think differently and proactively on topics like that. But affordable housing is one we've talked about a lot, and I would think it could have priority over some of the other topics that are listed in terms of urgency.
Okay. Other comments? So what I'm hearing is we need to more deliberately plan, or ideally we'd like to plan several meetings ahead so we have some better clarity in terms of what's coming up. For some of these things, and again, I did get over the weekend, we did finalize some of those choices. That spreadsheet went out to everyone today. So you see where all the topics were and which ones seemed to be preferred by the council members. And then I asked city administrator to get with the appropriate presenters, department heads, if that were the case, and find out when can you get this to us. Let's get these things on the calendar. That's where we're at yesterday.
Are you ready for this, or what are you?
It's not me. It's the HRA and it's the foundation, and I think they've been ready for.
And who's pulling all those people together?
Well, I believe both the council president and the city administrator were copied on the notes that I sent out. So, there.
So if they're ready, I mean, again, we can set that date if they're ready to go.
Okay. April 4th.
All right.
That settles that one.
Comments. We'll pencil that in on the calendar.
Okay, I've got that down for April 4th then. The third item is, and what I've been working on, and ultimately I want direction from the council, because if four of you say we're not considering this, then I'm just going to stop it. But the current taxi cab ordinance bans TNCs by default, by de facto action. TNCs are transit network companies. They're software programs that allow for transportation options. You've heard of Uber and Lyft. Those are two examples of that. They don't own vehicles. They own a technology, but because our ordinance stance forces them to own vehicles, they are prohibited from Rochester. And I would like to bring us in line with Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth, Moorhead just passed at St. Cloud, a lot of other cities, more than 400 cities in the U.S. that allows this as an option, particularly to help with issues like getting home at bar close. I'm working with some folks in the industry to put an ordinance together, but I've heard some grumblings that there are people that just don't want TNCs as an option in Rochester. They just want them to remain banned as they are today. So I was going to keep working on it unless four people on the council tell me that they would just like to see the TNCs continue to be banned. Does anyone want to see them banned in Rochester? One?
I don't think they're banned. I think they've reached out to them and they haven't returned calls. So we have some rules, I guess, that they need to be aware of. So.
Two?
I haven't seen the case to make it to bring forward as a topic. We're hearing, as Mr. Ruska said.
I'll just bring the ordinance forward.
Well, I'd like to hear from the groups to hear the pros and cons.
Right. Okay.
I will tell you, in all honesty, I know very little about it. Mm-hmm. I've never used it.
Agreed.
But if I want it, if we're seriously talking about doing this, then I want to hear the pros and the cons from the groups who've used them, who haven't used them. I don't want to live off what I hear on TV. I mean, we heard about the last person who did some shootings who was a driver of one of these companies.
And had a perfect record.
Yeah, right. But I think I want to know more about it. I'm never opposed to hearing or learning about new ideas, and then I make a decision from there. So I'm not going to go out and say I'm supporting a project or against it until I hear about
it. But you know what? I don't have four people telling me not to work on it, so I'll keep working on it. And I encourage you to. Both myself and Aaron Reeves, we use them. So, you know, if you want to learn a little bit more about them, we've had the experience. The last item that I have of the four, and I brought this up when we did many of our board appointments, I remain concerned about imbalances in race, gender, and age on our boards and commissions. We received a little bit of data on that, and it confirmed that we do have some issues with that. And now you may say that the process is yielding the best candidates to sign up, but the fact that we just crossed the threshold of being one-third women serving on these boards tells us that our process is a little bit messed up and we're clearly not getting all the voices being heard. I had asked for some sort of an update by the end of February, and really we haven't had anything happen, so it is on the list. I don't know where it's sitting, but
I thought Donna Brussel sent something out to
you. She sent information on. She sent out data on the on some racial makeup and gender makeup.
As much as she could determine.
Yep, and but we don't have any plan or any items to address the issues. And there are some great things that other cities in Minnesota are doing to address it. Not the least of which is Minneapolis. They actually show you who applied for the positions as well. So that's.
Well, I guess I'm not sure. I would like the idea about calling people up for names if they didn't get on a committee, or the other. But I do believe it's important for us to be out there encouraging people to be on these committees so that they have a more rounded base of people to select. That's not saying that I'm not always sure the way things end up is the way we always like to see, and we're not seeing. But I do believe that it's our responsibility to be out there encouraging these groups to apply for committees, and it's up to us to be responsible. In our position, to be responsible to know what openings are out there so that we can encourage groups to do that. That I would hope would help bring some of these numbers up because of the fact that we're out there working ourselves and supporting.
And they have gone up substantially in the last 7 years.
Yeah, I think so. Mr. Hickey?
Yeah, I was going to see, and the mayor's not here, but to that process, a lot of times I don't have visibility. They're probably out there posted. I was wondering if we could get a list of these openings as they come up. And I know, for example, I do an electronic newsletter to my ward, maybe advertise some of these positions as they come up on boards and commissions. And again, perhaps that material's out there and I'm just not knowing where to look. But if we could maybe consolidate that and get that list to the council, that'd be great.
In terms of who applied and who we chose, I think the mayor believes that some people may not want to be identified as applying and not receiving the appointment.
It's actually public data, though.
Yeah. If they're selected for an interview, it's public.
And he interviews everybody.
And the city of Minneapolis, actually, when all of the recommendations come forward, they just provide that because it is public data.
I don't know that the application always has the data you're looking for on it. So, I
mean, it has the names anyway.
The names are both.
And I can't even go that right anymore. Yeah. But
yeah. Well, let me make a comment. You know, this is it's a good point that you raise, again, Mr. Logic. I have to agree with Mr. Bilderbach that we have a responsibility to reach out also. I may have some affinity groups that maybe you're not connecting with. But, so I think your point's well taken.
I think part of it, too, is that boards are especially important to give voices to parts of the community that are missing from the city council. And for better or for worse, we ain't very diverse. Sorry, Sandra. But and I think that these boards are, that makes it even more important that they get a voice.
Yeah, I'm not arguing that with you, Michael. I think that's pretty true. But I think the point that Sandra made is that she has some groups that maybe I don't needs a window to the council to reach across to the council members to try to help, because I have a large group of minorities that live with. And I'd love to see them more active and more boards and committees. But if I don't seek those out, or if I don't check with other people who might have those contacts, that's a responsibility of us as council members to be out there encouraging the general public, our citizens, to be out there working for, to be a part of this community. And we have to do that. I mean, I'm not going to get into a big debate of who's on these committees and should they be. But if we're looking for a change, it's us that have to help make that change possible.
I agree.
it's kind of you know, I think what we need to do, as I mentioned before, we need to continue to try to act affirmatively to try to be as inclusive as we can. And that we do some good faith documentation and hope that we can improve upon the current status through that method.
And I agree with Mr. Bilderbach. To some degree, it's incumbent on us, when we know these openings are coming up, to let our, you know, various constituent bodies know about it so that they're aware and hopefully apply.
Mr. Hickey brings up a good point. If it's the fact that we don't know, if we can be notified when these spots open up, I think that would be help. That's another tool that we can use to help go out and try and recruit people for these positions.
Just a quick comment, I apologize, but we do have to wrap up by 5. There's another meeting in here at 5 o'clock. Ms. Wendell?
I will see to it you get the names of, that you get the openings that are coming up. Now the names, I wouldn't think that you should have the names on the RCA when the appointment, but probably if you want the names, it could be delivered to you separately.
Yes.
But I would suggest you don't list all the names, the ones that were rejected on the RCA.
I was going to mention about, he's specifically talking about on our committees and boards, but also we have the Human Resources Department coming forward pretty soon, and it also applies to how are we incorporating some of these ideas into our own system. And like I say again, we can all talk about we don't have, but how are we acting affirmatively to try to be more positive about it? And, you know, I've talked to a lot of people. I haven't been all that successful, but I sure have been acting affirmatively in terms of speaking at different churches or wherever. So that's what I think we need to make sure that we do.
The other thing I was going to say is, as I looked at the list, just so that others are kind of aware of what we're talking about, there was a list of 37 items that we asked council members, what would your preference be as far as discussion, and those that, where there were at least 4 individuals that thought this was an important topic, we're going to try to prioritize those. And these are fairly weighty topics. Bringing in the county engineer to talk about county road standards in urban areas, the street utilities, street funding. Street funding is a huge topic we know about. Ms. Means and that topic on minority policy, that one made the list. The update on affordable housing, that made the cut. So we've got a number of things that are, you know, fairly weighty topics. So
you mentioned the street funding. I talked to Richard and Dale today. They're working on that proposal that Michael had, and they indicated that in about a month they should have something available. for the council's discussion on that particular matter.
So that was the point of the exercise, and again, the results were kind of filtering in, and I wrapped it up and sent it out over the weekend. So now we'll try to get those on the calendar with more predictability that Mr. Williams talked about, and try to make our planning efforts a bit more clear.
And I also attempt to, things come up like Dale's thing last week and Sally's deal, and to indicate to all the council at the time it comes up and when it probably will schedule. Because if it fits in to a meeting that's coming up and we can do it quickly, then I'd like to still put it on.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to thank you for the work that you've done to try to identify and
I will say sometimes it's an exercise that's pretty cast.
Respond online, that's great. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We are adjourned.
Yeah. I sent in the